I talked to you a little bit about the geography of the country, the north and the south, and the population. And I think I got as far as questions of immigration, where people come from, and so on. Okay, so I was talking a little about immigration and racism, and later on I will be giving you some of the history of racism in Britain, which is depressing, and the history of anti-racism, which is not so depressing. Here are two important moments in the history of racism in Britain. One is the Macpherson Report in 1999. This was very interesting because the government asked, what happened is a black man was murdered by five white men, and it seemed clear afterwards that the police were not interested in finding the murderer. A government report, the Macpherson Report, written by very respectable people, very rich people, said the police are fundamentally racist. And in fact, it said the police are institutionally racist. That was the term they used. This is not some left-wing orator. This is an official government report, said in 1999, the police are institutionally racist. That means that, according to the report, a racist policeman is not an exception. Yeah? You understand what I mean? Institutionally racist. This was very shocking. And a series of new laws were passed to try to do something about this situation. But that Macpherson report was very shocking because an official report said most of the police are racist, which is very unusual. A second element, which is very important, of course, in Britain as in France, is that today racism is very much aimed against Muslims, dangerous Muslims. Yes, and this is what we call, of course, Islamophobia, and this got worse in the last 10 years after the terrorist attacks in New York and in London. Perhaps you remember, again, that was very shocking. An underground train was exploded, many people died, and life became harder in England if you were a Muslim. Here we have just a couple of symbols of the Muslim religion in Britain. At the top left you have just the leaders of the Muslim Council of Britain. The Muslim Council of Britain, the Council, yes. The MCB. If you look on the internet, you will see this is the biggest organisation of Muslims in Britain. And the other two are on the top right is a banner from a political party which does not exist today, but for 5 years or so, Respects was a political party with trade unions and Muslim organisations inside this party, Respect. It lasted for 5 years, and it had some success.
There's a symbol.
And finally, just a banner, Stop Islamophobia,
at the bottom.
This is a banner from the fascist organisation in Britain. Sorry. This is the British National Party. And they have had more influence in the last 10 years. They are not big like the Front National, a small organisation. But nevertheless, in 2006, the British National Party got 54 local councillors elected. Alors, c'est pas la peine de le comparer à la France, c'est-à-dire que c'était le choc en Angleterre parce qu'ils avaient 50 conseillers municipaux dans tout le pays pour le British National Party. J'ai pas compté sur le Front National, c'est dans les centaines et centaines.
That was a big shock to people that there were 54 fascist councillors.
And a few years later, as you can see, in the 2010 elections, the party only won 26 council seats in the whole country. So very small, but they make a lot of noise. You can see that the slogan of the racists, Britain is full up. Also here you have the slogan, foreign workers are taking our jobs. And they're typical
slogans of these people.
Here are just two examples of newspapers dealing with questions of racism. On the left you have, rather unusually for some, which generally is a very conservative paper, but in this case, it's not. This is supposed to be a message against racism. All of the children have a poster, and on the poster is a racist insult. Chaque enfant a une insulte différente qui se réfère à cette origine. Et la question, qu'est-ce que nous avons en commun? Alors, une fois n'est pas coutume, le son va expliquer comment on peut tous vivre ensemble, malgré le fait qu'on se fait insulter de cette façon. Ce sont des insultes à faute,
je ne vais pas les dire, mais on sait qu'elles existent.
On the other side, you have an important magazine, the New Musical Express, which is the biggest music magazine in Britain. And you can see that they have organised a concert of music with the organisation Love Music, Hate Racism.
This is an organisation today in Britain about racism.
Yeah. Love Music, Hate Racism. It's similar to an organisation many years ago, Rock Against Racism. But of course, today, the most popular music is not rock. It's hip-hop and garage and so on. And so the organisation is now called Love Music, Hate Racism, or LMHR, LMHR. Love Music, Hate Racism, LMHR. Okay, so you are not surprised to see that in England, just like in France, racism is quite strong, but there is opposition. It's a continual changing situation. Yet these are anti-racist organisations from the past in the 1970s and 1980s to organisations, Rock Against Racism, which concentrated on music, concerts, The Clash, Gang of Four,
Protect the
Clash, the Clash, Protect the Yeah, okay. Extra Effects, very good Extra Effects. And on the other side, another organisation, the Anti-Nazi League. The Anti-Nazi League was a very successful organisation in the 1970s, and at the end of the 1970s, every time the National Front in England had a meeting with 100 people, there were 1,000 anti-racists outside trying to stop the meeting. And it was fairly successful. The National Front was very demoralised, because if every time you have a meeting with 100 people, there are 1,000 people in front demonstrating, it's very demoralising. So that was relatively successful. And here we have two anti-racist campaigns from today. Over here you have a campaign against the British National Party, organised by Unite Against Fascism. Notice this campaign is rather particular. It is election time, and they do not tell you who to vote for. It does not say vote Labour or vote Communist. It just says vote against the British National Party. So the message of this campaign is you vote for who you want, but please don't stay at home. You must go to vote against the British National Party, the fascists. So, and on the other side, you have a campaign called Show Racism the Red Card. Perhaps you know that there is a particular problem with racism in football. Yeah, the football fans. Sometimes the racist organisations try to organise every Saturday at the football matches. And Show Racism the Red Card is an organisation against racism in football. They go to the football matches on a Saturday and give out leaflets. Look, here is the truth about immigrants, why racism is stupid, etc. So specifically for football, very interesting new idea. Okay, that was the end of part one. That was where I should have finished last week. And if you please note down this, this is where you can find information, and often you can find the recording of the class. I'm not promising to do it every week, because sometimes I forget and sometimes it doesn't work, but I will try to do it every week, because I know it can be difficult to listen in English.
Was I even illegal, I thought? I should have been doing anything.
The first category is agriculture. Agriculture and fishing. And I think you will not be surprised to see that agriculture and fishing in Britain is small. It is not an agricultural country. Yeah. 0.9% of the population, of the working population. 1% of the population. In France, it is 4%. Yeah, it's small, but 4% is a lot more. So agriculture and fishing is not so important. Fishing a little bit in the northeast, yeah, herring, but not so important. The second category is energy and water, producing water and electricity. Again, not very big, 0.6%. Okay, alors, je ne vous demande pas d'apprendre par cœur tous les six chiffres, mais de savoir quelles sont les grosses catégories, quelles sont les chiffres. Manufacturing is production in factories, making cars or tables or iPhones or keys or whatever. Manufacturing is producing things, generally in factories. And you can see that 10.6% of workers in Britain work in the factory producing things. Now, you might think that 10% is not a lot, but it's still nearly 3 million people producing things. Of course, in the last 20, 30, 40 years, this number has gone down. As you know, next week I have to buy a washing machine because my washing machine is broken. I looked at Dati, made in China, made in Vietnam. That's the situation today. And it's the same in Britain. The big factories of the 1950s and the 1960s, my mother worked in a big factory. Today, there are not so many factories around. Construction, a building offices or roads or motorways or hospitals or prisons, about 4.7% of the workers are working in construction. Of course, construction is a very dangerous job. There are a lot of accidents in buildings, even today. Every day, about one person every day in Britain is killed in construction. It's a dangerous job. But you can see that most of those categories are relatively small, and now we come to the big categories. Distribution, hotels and restaurants. 6.5 million people. Distribution, that means shops, supermarkets, clothes shops, shoe shops, electronic shops, washing machine shops, etc. But it is enormous, 24%, 23.8% of the workers are working in shops and restaurants, from McDonald's to the expensive restaurants, cheap restaurants, all kinds of restaurants. This has risen, the number of restaurants in Britain has risen very quickly. Are you putting the second point up? Okay. Transport and communication, telephones, roads, railways. Unfortunately, the British trains are not very good. The London Underground is better than before, but not so good. 5.8%. And look at the last two categories, which are very big. First of all, banking, finance and insurance. 21% of the working population. It's enormous. London is a very big international banking centre. much bigger than Paris or Berlin or Frankfurt. It's a big international banking centre and insurance. Insurance, all kinds of insurance, personal insurance, but especially commercial insurance, transport insurance, etc. A lot of people work in insurance. Insurance is an extremely boring place to work, but a lot of people do. And finally, teachers, doctors, nurses, cleaners, etc. Schools, hospitals, etc. Public administration, education and health. Public administration is the local council that we spent in. And education, of course, that's me. And health. Yeah, health.
Difficult to pronounce, isn't it? Health. So that's the sector. So
sorry, she's going to do the There is also a distinction between full-time workers and part-time workers. How many people here work part-time? Keep an eye on that. How many people here work full-time?
Good. Yeah, okay, yeah. So part-time workers, quite a lot. 7.5 million. 21.5 million full-time workers and 7.5 million part-time workers.
Now, full-time in England is not 35 hours, 40
hours. We will see this in a moment. The British work long hours, more than in France, unfortunately. One of the problems we have recently is that many people who would like to work full-time cannot find full-time work and they can only find part-time work. The companies who are having economic problems prefer to reduce your hours instead of making people redundant.
Alors, l'expression sur le dernier lien, making people redundant, ça c'est des licenciements économiques. Si on dit à un moment licencié, on dit I have been made redundant. On dit à moi, c'est mon rendu, pas dans mon appart.
Okay, so one of the problems, there is not enough full-time work for people to have. C'est dur d'être étudiant, c'est vrai.
Okay. Here then we have some idea of the categories. Vous savez souvent quand vous demandez à quelqu'un qu'est-ce qu'on perd en gros, il travaille chez SFR.
Okay, so here we have the distinctions. At the bottom category is have never worked or long-term unemployed. Long-term unemployed.
15% of men and 20% of women are in this category. Never worked, or long-term unemployed, more than 2 years unemployed. A lot of people.
If we go up, we get routine occupations.
C'est une façon gentille de dire des emplois chantants. A routine occupation. En fait, c'est un emploi qu'on peut apprendre dans un jour de la paix pour nettoyer les rues, ce genre de choses. behave the British Jews. And this counts as 7% of women and 11% of men really do these routine occupations. Lower supervisory and technical occupations. This is where you need some training, perhaps a nurse or something like that would be a technical occupation. Or lower supervisory, a supervisor in a superior hierarchy. So for example, if you work in an office and you are the boss of five people, you are a supervisor. You're not really a big boss. You just organize the work of the intersection. Around 11% of men and 4% of women are small employers or work for themselves. Small employer, say the BBC again, is not pointing. Imagine you're dealing with Yamlin. We keep going up. We have intermediate occupations. Depends on this, yeah. Or more than not in your example. Intermediate. So perhaps all that be. Perhaps all that be. Perhaps all that be. If that's me, a B, it's a good message you in the office. And then going up, we have lower managerial and professional occupations. And right at the top, higher managerial and professional occupations. Okay, just to give you an idea, of what's happening here. Look, donc, pour les petits managers, pour les grands managers,
we do this.
Now, here is some bad news. In Britain, people work for a long time. 13% of employees in Britain sometimes work more than 48 hours a week. That's a lot of time, yeah. And on average, a full-time employee works 44 hours a week. That's also a full-time employee. Employee, so they say that employee. Okay. And on average, a full-time employee works 44 hours a week, more than in most countries, and on average, an employee works 40.2 hours a week. Donc, 2 heures plus que 40. En moyenne, parce qu'il y a des gens qui travaillent 10 heures plus et des gens qui travaillent 5 heures de moins. But people work a long time in Britain. One of the reasons is that the trade unions in Britain are not as strong as they are in France. The maximum legal working day is 13 hours. In France, 10. Okay? And finally, holidays and paid leave, 24 days, which is approximately the same as in France. In France it is 25 days. Love, so pretty good vocabulary. Leave, congé, on the sort of term. Donc, il y a une sorte de leave. Maternity leave, if you're going to have a baby. Yeah? If you're a woman and you're going to have a baby. Sick leave, if you are ill.
Yes, unemployment.
Question for my job, I'm a university teacher.
not a lot of money compared with other jobs, but we do exactly what we want at work. I have no manager. Nobody tells me what to do. That's nice. And that's why I think nearly everybody would say a university teacher is in the middle class. Not because we have a lot of money, but because we are rich, we have no managers, no discipline, we do what we want to read. No, nobody tells me what to teach. More questions. What class do you think you belong to? This is a difficult question because, for example, nurses. People put in his hand in the air, will not put in song, it will learn that everything. Are you working class or middle class? Some nurses will say, I am working class. Look, I don't have a lot of money. My manager, I have no power, my manager tells me what to do. And other nurses will say, no, I'm middle class. It's a prestigious job. I did a lot of training and education. So sometimes it's a matter of opinion. But one important question is, what class do you think you belong to? What leisure activities do you participate in? For example, how many people here play golf?
Okay.
How many people play football? It's true, in France, if you play golf, it's mostly it's a game for prestigious people. Whereas in England, a lot of ordinary people play golf. So one important question is, what leisure activities do you participate in? Do you go to the cinema or to the opera, etc.?
We do.
What part of town do you live in? This is a little different in Britain because in London, for example, very often the poorer people live in the centre of town. Quand on voit les articles dans les journaux français sur les banlieues, c'est très difficile de les traduire en anglais. Parce qu'en Angleterre, les banlieues, c'est d'avoir des riches et en centre-ville, c'est des pauvres. Et alors, quand on voit les émeutes dans les banlieues, on s'imagine des riches. It's also true that classes are changing. moments. So the upper class has changed. Today, the aristocracy is not so important, although they are still important in Britain. In the same way, the working class in the past was people who worked with their hands. But today, most of the working class do not work with their hands. And finally, the most difficult question of all, who is the middle class? Very difficult question. I don't really know the answer, but there are many different opinions. And all of the opinions are about how much money, how much power do you have.
We're going to look at some pictures in a moment. Il ne faut pas écrire chaque mot, hein. Il faut écrire upper class plus tellement aristocratique, working class plus tellement manuel. Voilà, etc.
Ok, here are a list of the 10 richest people in Britain. The richest, just to show you a little about the upper class. Here we have the 10 richest people in Britain. The richest man in Britain has 10,800 million pounds. And his name is Lakshmi Mittal. And he works in steel. Let's see. The blue machine said chef that you call on his SE. Number two, with only 7,000 million, Roman Abramovich. And number three, Gerald Rosa. And I'll give you an idea of the Wagon to the Twat Rubish. It's not a lucky house, and it's not that lucky. Going down, you can see that other people have become very rich in pharmaceuticals, food packaging, retailing, etc. Okay, so these are the richest people in Britain today.
Of course, for a long time, the aristocracy had a lot of power with a lot of land. Also, perhaps you remember that the British Parliament has two sections, the House of Commons and the House of Lords. And for many, many centuries, the House of Lords was only aristocrats. Today, we still have the House of Lords, but there are no aristocrats in the House of Lords. We keep the same name, the House of Lords. But the House of Lords today does not have aristocrats in it. Here you have a little history of the House of Lords. The three important dates in the history of the House of Lords. 1911, 1958, and 1999.
First of all, in 1911, they reduced the power of the House of Lords. The House of Lords was only made up of aristocrats, but in 1911 they reduced the power.
C'est des trucs du genre, ils peuvent retarder le droit, mais pas annuler.
In 1958, for the first time, the House of Lords included people who were not aristocrats. This is what we call
non mi ha lasciato in Europa, un po' come ho fatto per la relation in Africa, in Angleterra, mi sono parlato delle conto della chambre di Europa. Allora, après ça, quand tu dis chambre di Europa, moitié aristocratique et moitié notable de la nation, donc, pas à cause de la naissance. And finally, in 1999, only 10 years ago, the rights of aristocrats to vote in the House of Lords has disappeared. Donc, selon le 99, les aristocrates héréditaires n'ont plus le droit de réviser les lois africaines. Donc, on est arrivé en 1999, là où on est arrivé en 1789.
Okay, and final piece of information for today. The richest 1% of the population earn about a quarter of the wealth of the country. 1% de la population contrôle 25% de la richesse. These rich people may be company directors, PDG, working in finance or in politics, the most important judges in justice, diplomacy, and among the army officers. And of course, the royal family is still an important symbol of this rich class. The sons and daughters of the upper class go to the public schools. Okay, and here we have three of the names of the most expensive public schools, Harrow, Eton, and Rugby. See, I showed a lot of examples. I'm quite on the usual.